Later on, I said, I have worked hard in vain. I have exhausted myself for nothing and in vain. Certainly, Jehovah holds back justice from me. My God withholds my wages. That is Isaiah chapter 49, verse 4, from the Ward Green Version of 2003, our daily scripture for today, little children. And we now may resume our study of the Ark of Urartu, where we left off, having completed chapter 4, paragraph 8 yesterday. We're now continuing with chapter 4, paragraph 9. We now have three dates occurring before the mirror of the common era, to wit, the deluge 3282, the eclipse of Nimrod 2774, and the birth of Abraham 2206. Why do we say before the mirror? Well, these dates are BCE with no corresponding mirror CE date. In other words, we haven't yet reached any of these numbers in our calendar in the common era. We're at the year 2024 currently. That's less than 2206. And so it's less than the other numbers of those other early dates. So there's no mirror date. There's no corresponding date that is the mirror at the beginning of the common era, which we consider to be the place where the mirror is located. We date the numbers on either side as being reflected in a mirror. And that's been a concept that was used in some of the articles that I've written previously. Well, radiocarbon dates have tested as terribly unreliable for dates as ancient as the deluge, they cannot be used without historical documentation in a meaningful way. What this boils down to is that radiocarbon dating does no actual dating of itself, or else the dates that result are hopelessly without merit, without independent confirmation. Radiocarbon dating does no actual dating of itself. This was proven in 1951 by the work of J.R. Arnold and W.F. Libby, as published in Science February 2, 1951, page 111. In that article, the historical date for Sneferu of 2625 is compared to the radiocarbon result of 2852 BCE, an average of four measurements, and appearing in error by 227 years. The date of Djoser, also called Djoser, is given as 2700 historically, whereas the radiocarbon gives 2029 BCE late by 671 years. These are two examples of problems with radiocarbon dates. In Science, April 19, 1963, W.F. Libby, Accuracy of Radiocarbon Dates, was the name of the article. The author assessed Egyptian dates as distinct from other places, saying that, quote, radiocarbon dates for Egypt for the period 4,000 to 5,000 years ago, or 2038 to 3038 BCE, may be consistently too recent, end quote. Also, Egyptian historical dates beyond 4,000 years ago, i.e. dates before 2038, may be somewhat too old, perhaps five centuries too old at 5,000 years, or 3038 BCE, end quote. So, one of the things we've also noted is that when we calibrate, or the calibration of the dates, which is done using dendrochronology, also adjusts these dates. It usually shifts them to an older date when we do the calibration based on the examples we've done already, but it's fascinating. Let me think of the, I'm trying to think of the example we did in Trojan War, you know, with the arc wood, for example, when we had the 5700, we calibrated it and went back to 6400 or something, didn't it? Trying to think now. Maybe we can look it up. Let's see. I've got the Trojan War article open here, I think. Is this the one? No, that's here it is. Here it is. Let's see. Let's look for the arc wood. Yeah. Jump to the arc wood here. Right. We assumed it was a calibrated age, first of all, but when we later on calibrated it, we determined the calibration gave us 6400 instead of 57. It made it older to start with, and before we did a further calibration using, because it was close to the time of the deluge, that was the other problem. Right? When we got too close to the time of the deluge, all the radiocarbon was out of whack because the atmosphere was greatly affected by the deluge and it disturbed all the radiocarbon in the atmosphere. You know, it was completely out of whack. There was no, you know, as a scientist, it was impossible to come up with an answer except by calibrating it somehow in another way, which is what was done by Robert Whitelaw, we saw in his work. But he said here, beyond 4,000 years, they're too old. In other words, that's the other thing that we did, was we said, when it seems like it's before the deluge, it's wrong. And that was a correction that Mr. Whitelaw made. So there are two corrections. One is the dendrochronological correction based on the tree rings for the times that are not too far back in history, but for the times that go back closer to the deluge. Something that Mr. Libby wasn't even aware of in his work. Doesn't even mention the deluge, but that's how we're explaining it easily here. We can easily explain it this way. It's the opposite correction when you go back to the time closer to the deluge from what it is when you're not so close to the deluge. So the calibration is done in a couple of different ways. The fact that this discrepancy was only noted for Egyptian dating... Here's a different thing altogether. The fact that this discrepancy was only noted for Egyptian dating suggested not a radiocarbon-specific problem, but a chronological problem with the ancient dynasties of Egypt. So here there's a different thing entirely, a proposal made here for something entirely different. He details Mr. Libby, who he was the... essentially the inventor of radiocarbon dating. He details specifically that the Egyptian chronology is an interlocking one and subject to possible systematic error. So whoever else was involved in the invention of radiocarbon dating, Mr. Libby is the one who's the best known. And he says... whereas other historical dates are presumably more independent of each other and therefore relatively free of such errors, talking about the systematic error in the Egyptian chronology. That was from Science, April 19th, 1963, volume 140, number 3564, pages 278 to 280. The article's name was Accuracy of Radiocarbon Dates. And it was an article written by Willard F. Libby, I think his name is, but W. F. Libby. At that time, Mr. Libby noted that the oldest astronomical fixed event was 4,000 years ago, the astronomical fixed event, so that they could fix it using astronomy. In other words, by doing a calculation using astronomical simulations, which is what we do also today, whereas we today... reading on here, as we've already reported earlier, we have today found the eclipse of Nimrod at 2774 BCE, more than 700 years earlier than what looked available by 1963. We've got a new oldest fixed astronomical event, which is now more than 700 years earlier than the earliest fixed astronomical event found by Mr. Libby. So we've really accomplished something with our discovery of the eclipse of Nimrod in 2774 BCE, because it's more than 700 years earlier than the earliest previously given fixed event in history. And we discovered the eclipse of Nimrod on January 22nd, 2011 of the Common Era, which is now about, well, pretty, it's more than 13 years ago now, approaching 14 years ago. So I wouldn't use any of the links here in the article without great caution, because they might work, but you have to be careful, because there are people who will try to mislead and compromise your computer by planting viruses and things in your computer, all sorts of things. So do not use those links unless you really know what you're doing, is my recommendation. The other thing, but you can look it up yourself using Google and using the other resources online. You can look these articles up. I'm not recommending using them. In my next paragraph in the article, The Ark of Urartu, too, I have a recipe for chocolate mint cheesecake. I think it's something I entirely forgot about. I thought I remembered the recipe of chocolate balls, coconut chocolate balls, that I reverse engineered it. The chocolate balls, I bought some chocolate balls. I really liked them, so I looked at the ingredient list and I made an estimate what I thought the amount of each ingredient was, and I made my own chocolate balls. And I know that recipe also is a great recipe for chocolate balls. It uses such natural ingredients, and they're completely raw, organic, and you don't need to refrigerate this cheesecake either. The same as with the chocolate balls. They don't need refrigeration, which is phenomenal. So this is a great recipe. I mean, the exact amounts probably don't really matter too much. I wouldn't say you have to use a Gavi for sweetener. You can use a lot less sweetener than half a cup, too. Whatever you want. But, I mean, you can use a lot less than that. Depends on how addicted you are to sugar. And you've got the dates in there. That should be... You might not need any sugar added. But you can add... If you want to add sugar, I guess you could add any source you want. But there's no real benefit in different... I mean, there's no... I don't like artificial sweeteners, and personally, I just don't like that at all. But some people like that, but even those spike the blood sugar. Anything that makes you think that you've eaten sugar, it causes your body to react as though you ate sugar, so it's not healthy. And because, apparently, as they're claiming anyway, sugar is not good for you. Although I'm not so sure that it's only the sugar that's the problem now, because... We'll find out this winter, maybe, and in later months upcoming, we may find out more, because I've just discovered this new supplement called R-lipoic acid. Alpha-lipoic acid is also another name for it. But this alpha-lipoic acid is supposedly great for losing weight, and yet it's not an artificial thing, it's not a drug, it's not an unnatural chemical, it's a natural thing. A natural substance that your body uses, alpha-lipoic acid, ALA, or R-lipoic acid, which is the name given to it by one of the companies that makes it. But if you use it as a supplement, they say it really helps with weight loss. But the reason I got into it in the first place was I discovered it because I was looking up something to regenerate the nerves in my finger, which I burned really badly. Burned my finger. Now, the nerves have not completely regenerated, but it's very tolerable, the amount of loss of nerve sensitivity that I have now in that finger is quite tolerable. It's not, it's barely noticeable right now. You know, it's noticeable that there's been some damage there. You can feel a tingling or a little bit of something. But it's hopefully, it's been since September 19th. It's been about a month since I did the damage. So I've been eating some of the foods, like walnuts are good for regenerating nerves, and so is alpha lipoic acid. But also another, and it's not, I didn't say to add this to the recipe, but you could. The other thing you can add to a recipe if you want to regenerate nerves, so, or you can, the other thing you can take as a supplement is N-acetyl-L-cysteine, which is something I was already taking when I hurt my finger. But it's a supplement that you take with D-alpha tocopherol vitamin E and with glutathione together. Those three, glutathione, vitamin E, and N-acetylcysteine, are a potent combination for sort of slowing down aging, or, you know, for just for basically overall health is what I understand it. They're very, very useful. And, you know, you can take any amount from zero up to sort of up to what is basically one amount, one 400 unit vitamin E, or two of those, or, you know, one of the glutathione, which is, I forget the amount of it, it's a large capsule, or two of those. Even you could take two each of those, and you could, or you could take, anyway, and you can double the amount of N-acetylcysteine. N-acetylcysteine can be doubled if you're trying to regenerate nerves. So, but I take one, one, and one if I wasn't doubling the N-acetylcysteine, in terms of one capsule of each. But the actual amount, 600 milligrams of N-acetylcysteine, 400 units of vitamin E, and the glutathione, I forget, 500 or something milligrams or whatever it is. What is the... Let me look it up. Let's see. Let's look it up. What am I going to search for? Yeah. Should be able to get that number. 300 milligrams. That's all it is. Per capsule, I guess. I'll just check to see what that is. Is it per capsule? Yeah. Each soft gel is 300 milligrams of the liposomal glutathione that I'm taking. What's the other one I was saying? The N-acetylcysteine. There it is. It knows what I'm searching for before I even search for it. 600 milligrams. Each capsule contains 600 milligrams. Right. So I take two of those right now per day, but if I were taking double the amount of everything, I'd be taking four of those per day. But whatever, you have to take it with food, because some of these things don't work so good and don't feel so good in the stomach. But most things, or a lot of things, you can take on an empty stomach. Actually, no, I shouldn't say most things. A lot of things... They don't interact with each other, is another thing. Most supplements don't interact badly with each other. And that I was really worried about when I first started taking supplements. I always thought, well, if you take one supplement with another one, it's gonna have a terrible, horrible, unpredictable interaction. But it's like with foods. You don't think about, well, I can't eat this food all the time with this food. Like, you're not always worried about combining foods. It's the same with supplements. You shouldn't be worried about that. So let's look for D-alpha tocopherol here. See if it finds it. It doesn't know. But if I look up vitamin E, it should know what I'm talking about. Oh, wait a minute. See. Maybe I'm not ordering my vitamin E from that. Okay, yeah, I'm probably not ordering it from that particular vendor. Let's see, try something else. Try this. Vitamin E. There it is. Yeah, I'm ordering 400 units of vitamin E natural. Well, it's a very natural. I don't want to name the company. What else we got? It's 400 international units, and it's D-alpha tocopherol acetate, 400 international units. Yeah, that's what I take for the vitamin E. That's right. So I don't get that from the same vendor from which I get the other things, but generally I get it all from one place. So we've got our recipe. We've used up quite a bit of time. Oh, today I was looking at some fascinating things about, remember we talked about the date of Joseph, right? What was I doing? Did I do that? Yeah. So I've got it here. Let's put it in a, can I duplicate this? And does it duplicate with the same? No. But I can do it that way though. Okay, let's drag this over here and bring it right here. Should work. But let's go back to the same lighting situation. Okay, here we go. Make it larger. So when we look at this, 1923 BCE, April 17th, Thursday, which is something we were very interested in this date because it was very, very close to Nisan 14 or 15, which is an important day in the Hebrew months, but also it's Tybi 1 in the Egyptian calendar, I noticed, and this would have been the day very possibly when Joseph stood before Pharaoh, because it's full moon, lunar day 16, but Tybi 1, if we go back one day previous, was the 16th of April, a Wednesday, but of course the Thursday began in the evening on Wednesday for the Hebrews. So Thursday and Wednesday become overlapped. So Tybi 1 is also the first of the Egyptian month, but it's more than that, it's lunar day 15 for the Egyptians, which was always for them, it's their religious full moon, and that was the day when they would appoint somebody also. So that would correspond perfectly well with the time of Joseph's appointment when he was 30 years old. Excuse me, let me try and stop sneezing here before I even start. But Joseph could easily, therefore, have been dated exactly to that time period, that exact time of the month and everything, as to his appointment as second in command of all Egypt by Pharaoh, which was then given, as so importantly given in the book of Exodus, chapter 12, verses 40 and 41, where we read that the dwelling of the sons of Israel who had dwelt in Egypt. But we know they also dwelt, it says, in Canaan at that time, because that's from the Septuagint version. It says they dwelt in Egypt and in Canaan. Right? The Septuagint adds, dwelt in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan. It says in the footnote there. Sorry, I should get that down below where you can see it. There we go. They dwelt in the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan. 430 years. So at that time, Joseph was in Egypt, but the rest of the sons of Israel were not in Egypt. But it says here, and it came about at the and this is in the next verse, verse 41. At the end of the 430 years, it even came about on this very day. See? So it's not talking about anything other than the 430 years. When it says on this very day, it means 430 years to the very day is what it's saying. That's the context. And that's remarkable because we can show that we found another day, right, that's actually corresponding to this. If we go to the 17th, it's a Thursday, but okay. So let's go on the 430 years later. Well, even if we take it as the Wednesday, it's still going to work. We go 430 years later, right? But we're not going to be... just full moon. We don't want that. That would mess us up badly. We want to go in new moon mode because otherwise it'll change the day of the month. But we go 400 years ahead. 400 plus 30. We're in 1493. April 16th, right? That's a Tuesday. It's lunar day 29. So we go to the end of the month, and then we go to the Thursday. Okay. But we're trying to get... This is the beginning of the month, right? We've got to go 430 years later to the equivalent month would get us to May. Lunar day 15 is May 2nd, right there. You see? Which is exactly the day, Thursday, when Egypt was departed from by the Israelites, or when the Israelites left Egypt on Nisan 14. Lunar day 15, according to the Egyptian way of reckoning. And when we look at the Julian day, which we did already, we can calculate from Thursday to Thursday. We can, you know, we can work it out as being a multiple of 7 days, of course, in the difference of the Julian days. And then the other thing we discovered it's in the video. Let's see, which video is it in? One of my videos here. Which one is it? That one. I found the video. Okay. I found the video with this information. And fortunately, I wrote it down. Praise Jehovah. I wrote this down. Hallelujah. That's what praise Jehovah is in Hebrew, right? Hallelujah, but video, Word Green, May 15th, 2024. I gave these Julian day numbers in that video from May 15th of this year. So that's not the one. Let's see. That's May 30th. Yeah. But wherever, let's see. Let's take a look at my video history here. May 15th. There it is. Yeah. So here it is, May 15th. Yeah, I started calculating these things. Why is that in reverse? Because, oh, you know why that's in reverse video? Because I make all my videos when I'm in reverse video. Yeah, so that's in reverse color. Okay, I know how I can get that. If I want to get that, I can get that. If I go to May, I have to go to May 15th and open it up, but... Okay, May 15th from this year, 915 is a number. So if we find 915, we will find May 15th right here. Let's find this one. There we go. If I open it in its original form, it is in the correct colors. It's not made inverted. So here in this video, May 15th, 2024, we found the difference in the two Julian day numbers from... Well, what's the Julian day number we just found? It's 1176227. But the Julian Day number for the year, let's go from that year. Wait a minute now. Hang on a second. What's the 242 then? Okay, so if this is from the Exodus, then this later number was the one, the 242-3529. That's the number from the Egyptian Constitution, which was 1923. It's really quite remarkable that in the year 1923 of the Common Era, the date was April 19th, when the first ever constitution of Egypt was declared. It was a Thursday, 1923, April 19th. Very similar time of year. It's a Thursday. It's 242-3529. Which is the same number, 2423529, that we showed in this video. When we subtract, I think I've maybe got the calculator even. Oh, no, it's shut. Okay. But we can do the same calculation. 2423529 minus 1176227. I remember these numbers almost by heart. That is 1247302, right? So 1247302 divided by 7 is a nice round number, right? Now, does that equal, I forget what that equals now, what else does it do we divide by, 41 or not? Yep, it divides by 41 and divides by 41 squared. 41, two factors of 41 and a factor of 2 and a factor of, so we can divide by 2 and a factor of 53. So it's all those things, all those factors, which are, end up being 1 when you divide by all those factors. So 7 times 41 times 41 times 2 times 53. That's the number of days between the time of Joseph being declared the second in command of all of Egypt, that Thursday, up until this declaration of the first constitution of Egypt in 1923 of our common era, the mirror date. It's the mirror date from minus 1923 or 1923 BCE until 1923 of our common era. There's this incredible same day, the very day. It's the very day. Just like it was the very day when they came out of Egypt, it was a Thursday. As well, after 430 years, which followed Joseph's appointment as being second in command of all Egypt. So, such incredible things as those are. We're out of time. It's October 18th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 1947 hours. North American Eastern Daylight Time. Thank you for listening and watching. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And it's Cassie, and it's Lev Dusty saying bye for now.